Sakura Saunders has long been involved in community radio in the United States, and she is the editor of protestbarrack.net. She has recently been involved in setting up community radio stations in two northern Aboriginal territories, the first in Fort Chipewyan, Alberta, and in Wet'suwet'en Territory in BC. She joins me on the phone from Portland. Hello, Sakura.
Hey there, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Welcome to CGSF. So how did you get involved in building these two stations?
Well, I first got involved by meeting members of the community through my environmental justice activism. So you mentioned, you know, I have a campaign against Barrick Gold, which is the world's largest gold mining company. And through that campaign, I've gotten involved in many other environmental justice movements based in Canada, because Barrick is a Canadian-based company. And so I met Mike Mercurdy from the Fort Chipewyan community through his advocacy around the tar sands. And then I also met Warner Nazel and Mel Basil from the Wet'suwet'en territories, and Frida as well. I met them at the Everyone's Downstream conference, which is organized around resistance to the tar sands. And so in meeting these communities, you know, we became friends, and then they found out that I was also involved in building community radio stations, and both Mike and Warner especially were interested in having me come to the communities and set something up. And so actually when I helped set up the radio station in Wet'suwet'en territory, it was in the context of an action camp. And what we did was we set up the radio station where there was a camp where we were learning about different forms of direct action, and we set up a temporary camp, which was going to be a permanent camp in the exact site where an Enbridge pipeline wants to be built. But now, of course, once that camp was over, we moved that community radio station to the reserve, the Unist'ot'en Reserve.
And has the station been going, continuing on that reserve after the camp?
They are still doing, they want to be really intentional about the way that they construct the radio station. So at this point, what we did was a number of radio workshops. So we would turn on the station, for example, at the high school graduation party. And we had a lot of the youth practice being on the air and practice doing radio shows and also playing their favorite songs from their iPods just to get them, you know, kind of involved in the radio station. We also did trainings on, you know, audio editing and things like that. But I really think that with that community, they want to have a system in place before they start doing 24/7 broadcasting. That community very intentionally wants to use the radio station as an educational resource for the community. And so now that they've given the community a taste of what it is to have community radio, they're going to, you know, set some systems in place before they start broadcasting 24/7. But on the other hand, the radio station that I helped set up in Fort Chipewyan, which is a downstream tar sands community in northern Alberta, they're broadcasting 24/7. You know, when there's no live DJ, it's just, you know, iTunes with a number of different playlists on random play. And that community station, you know, it's one of two radio stations, period, in town. And so it not only wants to be an educational resource, but also an entertainment resource for the community. And so, you know, one of the ways they engage the community is they get texts requesting songs and things like that. And, you know, it's largely run by one person who lets other people come in and guest DJ and send in requests. And so that's a radio station that doesn't require as much structure. And so once we set that up, they just ran with it.
That's amazing. And in Fort Chip, what inspired, you mentioned that in the Wet'suwet'en Terry, it was the action camp that started it. What started it? What was the motivating starting factor for the station in Fort Chip?
Well, I mean, it was this advocate that I mentioned earlier, Mike Mercurdy. He had always dreamed of having a radio station, and, you know, a lot of people are really bored in Fort Chipewyan. It's a community of about 1,300 people, and it's super isolated. The only way to access it during the summer is either by boat or by plane, and during the winter is by an ice bridge or plane. And so it's a very isolated community, and you know, he really wanted something that people could have fun with, and that would be a really popular source of entertainment and education. And he had been doing some radio announcements about the tar sands, and that's what kind of got him interested in radio. And then he started talking to other First Nations communities through his travels in his advocacy against the tar sands. And through kind of encountering these other First Nations community radio stations, he was really inspired to bring something home. So, of course, as soon as he heard that I was involved in radio station building in the States outside of my environmental justice work, he, you know, invited me to come to the community.
And how did people in the in this community receive it, the new station?
It was pretty incredible. The radio station is called FCBC, Four Chip by Chip, and you know, we like spray painted Mike's car and drove around promoting the station in its first couple of days, and his phone was ringing off the hook with texts and with phone calls, people making requests. People were just stopping by the house constantly, making requests, jumping on the radio. You know, I'd pull them into Mike's bedroom and we'd record public service announcements and just, you know, little announcements saying, you know, you're listening to Four Chip by Chip, FCBC, 107.3 FM. And so the response from the community was great. Everyone loved it. Everyone loved listening to it. Everyone loved hearing the requests. And I just feel like we got a lot of community engagement from the get-go. And people were scheming about, you know, what types of shows they could do. And it was really exciting to see.
And you'd mentioned that in Fort Chip, there was only one other radio station. Do people there have access to other forms of media, whether it's community media or corporate media?
Well, a lot of people in Fort Chip have satellites. So they have satellite radio. There's one other station, which I believe is a CBC station, that's broadcast out of Edmonton originally. And so they do have access to that radio as well, which a lot of people listen to. We actually turned off during radio bingo because we eventually needed to change frequencies because we're causing a little bit of interference, which we did. We changed frequencies. You know, a lot of the people access the radio already, even though they only had access to one radio station. And I believe there's other newsletters and things, but mainstream media doesn't have a large presence there, I would say.
And in Wet'suwet'en territory, what's the situation like there in terms of other media access?
In Wet'suwet'en territory, they're close to Smithers, which is a population of 5,000, which is kind of like the big town in the area. So they have access to media through that. Also, there's a First Nations radio station that a lot of people listen to that I believe comes from Prince George. So again, it's non-local. In Wet'suwet'en territory, they used to have a radio station that was run by the First Nation people themselves, but one day somebody came in and stole all the equipment. And so they lost that resource, and a lot of people really appreciated it, especially listening to that radio station. So that's kind of what motivated Warner to get in touch with me. He was, the first time we met, he was like, yeah, we used to have a station, everyone loved it, and all the equipment got stolen. So, you know, we'd really like something in this community to replace the hole that that radio station left.
No kidding. To backtrack, you had said earlier that these two communities are in the spotlight, kind of in regards to their relationship to tar sands development. Fort Chip is downstream from the actual tar sands mines, and there are high cancer rates there. And the Wet'suwet'en Nation is opposing the construction of the Enbridge pipeline, which would bring tar sands oil across their territory. How does this factor into what kind of stuff you would hear on their stations?
Well, definitely, you know, with the Wet'suwet'en station especially, you know, there's a lot of like education work that's being done through the radio station. So, for example, as part of the Action Camp, we had a rally and march, a really festive march throughout Smithers, which is a big town in the area. And, you know, we stopped at various sites within Smithers that are somehow connected to the forestry industry, the mining industry, or the Enbridge Pipeline, and also CN Rail, as it's connected to the tar sands. And at each stop, we heard a number of speeches from both local people and folks from other First Nations that came out of solidarity for the Wet'suwet'en people. So those recorded speeches were played on the radio station when we had it running. You know, we went to Radio for All and downloaded a lot of the First Nations radio programming that's available on there, including stuff from Co-op Radio. And so, you know, the Wet'suwet'en people, they're really amazing. Their analysis really incorporates a lot of solidarity work. So, for example, they actually did a protest in solidarity with the refugees that came in by the boat, the Tamil refugees. Also, they're against carbon credits. And this is one of the things that really impressed me so much about the Wet'suwet'en people when I heard their hereditary chief, Warner, speak about this issue. They're being approached to sell carbon, you know, basically receive money for preserving their own forests. So in a sense, they just get all the positive aspect of these carbon credits. But because they know that those carbon credits will facilitate the expansion and justify the expansion of the tar sands, they are against accepting that money. And so I was just extremely impressed with that community, and they're using the radio station definitely more as an educational piece. In the Fort Chipewyan community, the situation is a little bit different. The radio station isn't as explicitly political. And of course, we slipped in, you know, educational speeches. Many of the speeches actually from the Wet'suwet'en Action Camp were played on the radio, as well as other just spoken word pieces. But definitely the feel for that radio station is not as explicitly political. And the reason that Mike wanted to do it that way is because, you know, everyone knows about the tar sands, and everyone doesn't need to be reminded of how destructive it is. You know, when you have a community of 1,300 people and, you know, 40 people have already died from cancer in recent years, you know, you don't need to be reminded of how bad the tar sands are. So it's political in a different way. It's political in the sense that it's a community building project. You know, his aim first is just to get people listening and using it. So that was kind of the impetus behind him wanting to get so many requests and wanting to engage the community on this really kind of simple level. And then, you know, he wants the community members to do shows, and he wants to do announcements about parties and projects that are going on in the area. You know, do classes about the native plants in the region, do classes about, you know, the wildlife of the region, so that radio station will be largely a community-building project, as will the Wet'suwet'en radio station as well. But in terms of broadcasting the negative impacts of the tar sands, I think that it'll just be a lot more subtle.
It definitely sounds like a remarkably empowering process.
It was really fun. I have to say, a lot of people had a lot of fun being on the air and getting comfortable on the air, and it never gets old. It never gets old just, you know, talking to people and having them be really shy at first, and then, you know, seeing the transformation of them becoming total hams on the radio.
Well, we need to let you go shortly, but before we do, I'd like to ask you your opinion. We often hear that radio is dying out, and your stories definitely paint a different picture. What do you think the future of media on reservations looks like?
Well, you know, the idea of radio dying out, you know, I mean, it just depends on what radio is offering, and radio has adapted to be on the internet and be available through via podcasts and lots of other forms. But especially in rural communities, radio is still the cheapest form of mass communication. You know, and everyone has radio stations, and you can't expect a community like Fort Chipewyan for everyone to have, you know, high-speed internet access or even a computer. So I think that radio still has a lot of time where it's going to be extremely relevant as the cheapest form of mass communication, cheaper even than newspapers and print. So, yeah, I just think that all the excitement that radio generated in both these communities is proof that, you know, radio is an extremely relevant form of media in lots of the world, well, especially in rural communities.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sakura.
Thanks so much for having me.
I have been speaking with Sakura Saunders. She has long been involved with establishing community radio stations in the States. She's also editor of protestbarrack.net, and she recently traveled to the Wet'suwet'en territory of northern BC and Fort Chipewyan in northern Alberta to help establish community stations there.